Morning, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call Senate Finance Committee to order. Time is 9:10, I guess, or 9:09, March 2nd, 2012. It's Wednesday. Today is not Wednesday. Today is Friday.
Close to it.
With me today is Co-Chair Hoffman, Senator Ellis, Senator Olson, Senator Thomas, Senator Egan. We've got the governor's FY13 capital budget, SB 160. This is the 10th hearing and climbing on the capital budget. The tentative order today is going to be, we're walking through the departments, and we got education coming first, followed by environmental conservation, followed by admin, followed by military veterans affairs, followed by natural resources, followed by fish and game. I doubt if we're going to get through all of them, but we're going to get through as much as we can. And again, I'd like to mention that we'll not be taking public testimony until later, and we are ahead of the normal calendar schedule doing the capital budget. We're trying to free up committee time for the upcoming attractions dealing with oil, assuming that we get a bill from resources. So with that, I'd like to go ahead and have the Department of Education and Early Development come forward. And if you can introduce yourself for the record and who you represent.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Mark Lewis. I'm the Acting Administrative Services Director for the Department of Education. Okay. So if we want to begin with reference number 52483, that's the Alaska State Library Archives and Museum Facilities, a $20 million appropriation request. This particular project is kind of taken an approach of phase funding rather than phase construction. It was the belief by the engineers in the department that it would be better to fully capitalize the project before we begin any construction. To date, we spent just a little bit less than $5 million on the land acquisition and planning. We're working with the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities on the design process. We have an RSA with them to help us manage this project. Even with the $20 million appropriation that you see in front of you, the project will still need an additional $74.5 million for an estimated total cost of $128.5 million for the project.
Okay.
The next three. Sorry.
Mr. Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm a big supporter of the SLAM project and have been so for a number of years. I don't understand why you're not asking for the full amount to construct the project so we can get it done. The dire condition of those three facilities have been well known to the administration and to the legislature for some time now. Senator Egan and myself and others have taken legislators on the tour of those decrepit facilities, all three of them. Why aren't we doing this in one fell swoop at a time when we have the cash money? And there won't be any phased construction or delay in the project that would undoubtedly add cost to the project. So why are we doing this in small chunks rather than the responsible thing and more cost-effective thing of getting all the money and getting the project done?
Through the chair, Senator Ellis, while I may agree with your sentiments on the project, I think that from the department's perspective, we have to look at the governor's total budget package and the priorities that he may have in front of him, and we can only put forward what we feel is appropriate at this point in time. Not saying that it wouldn't be a good idea to get all the money up front, but I think it also provides some relief to each annual budget if it is a phased funding approach. Other than that, I can only speak to the fact that we are receiving some support, and that's what we see here in the $20 million request at this point in time.
Well, I do credit you for calling it SLAM, the State Library Archives and Museum. For a while, you all were trying to insist to call it LAMP. And I think that was offensive to the legislative consciousness because we're supporters of the SLAM project. So thank you for getting with the program.
Yeah. Thank you.
Next item, please.
The next three items are actually based on the process that we have in place for presenting prioritized projects from the department. The first two are the school construction projects for Emonic and Kaliganik. And then the The other appropriation for the major maintenance grants are the first 14 projects on the major maintenance list.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hoffman.
I've had meetings with the plaintiffs of the Casale decision, and it was their understanding and my understanding that the settlement was not to be funded, or the Casale consent decree was not to be funded with funds from as a result of the Senate Bill 237, which set aside urban and rural school construction. So I believe that the reference on the bottom of page 3 saying that the construction of the Amonac School in Senator Olson's district be funded with the REAA fund is not following the decree. They've informed me that this is not the understanding. The list of schools for the REAA funds start with the construction of after the five schools that are in the dissent decree. They said that that was part of the agreement with the administration. So I wonder if that could be fully addressed. The members that I met with said that if this is the course of action, that they are not in agreement with this course of action. So I know that you're probably not the proper department even to address this issue, because the agreement was made with the Department of Law, but the direction that we're going is in the magnitude of, I would say, some $70 million in discrepancy. And my office has been conveyed this already to the governor's office, and this needs to be followed through. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to put that on the record.
Okay, thank you. Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wanted to ask about a project in Fairbanks. It was the Ryan Junior High School, which last year, when the dust settled on the major maintenance list at a certain cutoff point, that particular project was the next project on the list. And from that time moving forward, it went from what would have been considered number one on the list to number 43 on the list, and then was moved up after discussions with the district and the department to number 34, where it now resides on the list. And I'd just be curious as to the explanation of that. Can hardly imagine a school that had been at one point number one on the list losing 43 positions.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Thomas, if you would allow me, I'll bring Sam Keto to the table. He can discuss the process and how that works, and he can do a better job than I can on that. Thank you.
I'm fairly familiar with the process, but certainly.
The third, if you could introduce yourself for the record and who you represent.
For the record, my name is Sam Keto III. I'm the facilities engineer for the Department of Education and Early Development, and specific to the Ryan project, last year the project was at lower on the list. On the maintenance list, we see a lot of turnover on the list. So if a project, and the list is generated annually, so each year a new set of projects come in for us to score and review, and we do see a significant number of new projects coming in towards the top of the list, projects that are funded and then completed, and other projects that come in that score at a higher level. So generally what we see in projects for the maintenance list is, in order to get funded, they need to improve the application, see a worsening of conditions, or other circumstances that would actually increase the number of points for that specific project. The specific project was scored lower on the list in the initial list. The district reconsidered and pointed some issues out to the department that weren't readily apparent in the original application process, and that project score was increased to the level that it is right now. But it is at that level, and was actually not ever at a number one level. It was resubmitted just as the same as every other project, and reprioritized this year. So the project actually has just remained closer to where it's at.
Senator Thomas.
I understand the process and the reevaluation on an annual basis. I just find it unusual that a school would drop that far down the list under reevaluation, especially one that has a seismic problem that engineers have indicated that the roof would cave in on it if there were a particular earthquake, which seems to me to be an extreme life safety issue, one serious enough that the borough is considering not using the school any longer because of that concern and fear. And I look at others on the list and I realize there are a lot of important life safeties, but I see kitchen facilities being redone on the ones that are now number 1 through 33 on the list. I see many of the ones that were on the list before with those same issues listed on them have now moved beyond that. So I would certainly I don't accept your response to the question, and I guess we'll just continue the discussion at a different time when we have more opportunity.
Maybe you can get back to the committee on how many of those projects on the current list were on last year's list, and a comparative ranking last year to this year, because it does seem to be an anomaly if you're right below the cutoff, 4 or 5, or in this case number 1 under the cutoff, that you drop down substantially down the list to a third or lower in the pack. I don't have the list in front of me, but it just seems odd. There may be good reason behind it. We just want to have a good understanding of what the reasoning is.
We can certainly do that.
Yeah. But we do expect that list to change from year to year. So we don't expect it to be frozen. But anyway, any other questions on major maintenance? There's $23,900,000 in the major maintenance list from the governor on any of these schools. Any other projects or comments that you have from the Department of Ed? I think that concludes your list. Is that correct?
We have one more item, Mr. Chairman, and that is the Mount Edgecombe High School deferred maintenance for $1.7 million. And the first item on that list that will be accomplished will be addressing their heating plant. We're calling it Phase 2. For the heating plant issues, we've got the girls' dormitory siding included in that deferred maintenance, and the boys' window wall dormitory, the wall replacement for the dormitory.
Okay. The heating plant, are you talking about the old generation building or the actual boiler or the actual physical heating plant? There's two issues going on. One of them, I think, is a reclamation issue.
Chair Stedman, the Mount Edgecombe project is actually an effort to separate the heating plant into two separate heating zones, the upper campus and the lower campus. And Phase 2 is for work on the upper campus, connecting all of the facilities to the main heating plant building, the original heating plant building, and abandoning the utilidor that currently serves as the conduit for transportation or for feeding heat to the upper campus or dorm buildings.
The sidewalk.
Correct.
Yeah. That was, I think, left over from World War II.
Correct. It was all part of the original district steam heat system.
Right. Okay. Thank you. Seeing no other questions for Department of Ed, I guess we'll move on to the next on the list, Environmental Conservation. If they could come forward, please. Introduce yourself for the record, who you represent, and then we'll walk through your list. And
thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Tom Chirin. Administrative Services Director, Department of Environmental Conservation. Mr. Chairman, with me is Bill Griffith. He's our Village Safe Water Municipal Matching Grant Programs Manager. We also have Larry Dietrich in the audience. We also have Kristen Ryan, she's the Director of Environmental Health or the Ford in Anchorage. They're available to answer any questions if the committee has. With that, Mr. Chairman, I will start with the list. The first project is reference number 41376. It is for the Village Safe Water Program. The request is for $51.5 million. It is this appropriation provide financial and technical assistance to rural communities to plan, design, and construct water and sewer system improvement projects.
Do we have any questions on their list of projects? Okay, next item, please.
The next one, the reference number is 46714, page 7. Mr. Chairman, this is for the Municipal Matching Grants Program. This appropriation provides funding to, again, plan, design, and construct drinking water and sanitation facilities. This appropriation funds about 16 projects. Again, the request is for $32,013,449. And again, there are 16 projects. If the committee desires, I'll be happy to go the list. Otherwise, I can go to the next appropriation.
All right. We have any questions on the list here for municipal water, sewer, waste? Seeing none, we'll go to the next appropriation, please.
The next one is, it's on your page 25. Reference number is 49697. Again, this is for the drinking water capitalization grant subsidy. Providing subsidy to the project is a requirement of the federal grant. And again, this is to meet the federal requirement. The next one is reference number 49698. Again, it's on your page 26. This is the request is $2,583,400. Again, this is for the clean water subsidy project. Again, this is to meet a federal requirement. The next one is reference number 33826, page 27. The request is for $2 million. It is for the statewide contaminated sites cleanup. This project funds assessment, cleanup, and monitoring activities at high-risk contaminated facilities, state-owned facilities, and those sites, we don't know the responsible party.
Next item.
The next item is, again, the reference number is 54473, $1 million for the Village Safe Water New Technology Approaches. Mr. Chairman, this is a new approach. I would like to yield the mic to Mr. Griffith to provide some background to the community.
If we have questions. Questions, Senator Egan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just curious what those new technologies are. We're spending $1 million and it doesn't really say what they are.
Can you help us with that, please?
Certainly, and for the record, my name is Bill Griffith, and I'm the Facility Programs Manager for the Division of Water in the Department of Environmental Conservation. Now, this appropriation, which totals $1 million, would be used to develop new technological approaches for significantly reducing capital and operational costs for existing systems. I think as the committee is aware, federal appropriations through the Village Safe Water Program have plummeted by nearly two-thirds in the last 8 years, from $73 million to less than $27 million. Meanwhile, the cost of addressing critical health-related water and sewer needs is increasing every year and is currently over $700 million, meaning that the deficit between available funding and the need is over $660 million. It's increasingly clear that the current approach to rural Alaska sanitation is untenable. It's no longer enough money to construct new systems and ensure the continued functionality of aging systems. Without a major increase in federal and state funding, the only practical solution is to bring innovative technological approaches into Alaska through an aggressive plan that would exploit private sector innovation and technological resources. The goal would be to cut capital and operating costs of providing running water and sewer by at least half. What we are primarily going to focus on, and we've been working with the university and a lot of partners like Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, Cold Climate Housing Research Center, is to look at what we call decentralized approaches to water and sewer. For 50 years, we focused on putting centralized systems into every community, which means one water plant, distributing water to every home, and collecting sewage to a central location. What we want to begin to focus on is getting decentralized systems into communities, which means individual household-based systems or a cluster of homes. There's a number of systems like this out there, but they haven't been developed specifically for the kind of environment that we have in Alaska villages. What we want to do is see how some of the existing approaches can be modified and be made viable for Alaska communities.
Can you have any further questions? Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And who are you doing this through? You're enlisting a consultant, or are you doing this on your own, or are you working with people like Cold Climate Regions housing folks that have done a fair amount of work in some of the rural areas regarding systems that potentially have a great potential in rural areas and have actually put some in place?
Through the chair, that's correct. We've had meetings already with Cold Climate Housing Research Center, people at University of Alaska, both Anchorage and Fairbanks. This would be a collaborative effort involving those partners. We work closely with the communities themselves and rural residents on any approaches that we may develop. But we also intend to work with the private sector and utilize requests for proposals and have those proposals evaluated, most likely through the university and potentially piloted through pilot homes developed by the Cold Climate Housing Research Center.
Okay, great, thank you. And could I just one more? And I don't mean to back up, but the last project talked about evaluation and assessment of cleanup of various sites in the state of Alaska. And the other day we had a conversation regarding some of the tanks that have been replaced, and the old tanks are left behind, and I forget what department we were even talking to at that point in time, but would that be something that you guys would be take interest in, is evaluating the removal of some of that facility that's left behind after tanks are replaced?
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, I would like to invite Larry Dietrich to the table so he could go over the question.
I didn't want to really.
No, we'll just go on.
Yeah.
You can get with Senator Thomas and flush out his question.
Yeah,
we'll do that.
There you go.
Set him, please. Page 30.
Yes, the next project is reference number 46946. The request is $750,000 for oil and hazardous substance first response equipment. And preparedness needs for prevention and emergency response within Alaska. The next project is reference number 54566. It's a $200,000 request for deferred maintenance for the State Environmental Health Lab. Again, this is to replace some of the unanticipated priority items.
And does that conclude your list today?
Yes.
Do you have any questions? Final question, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is more directed toward Mr. Griffith, but as you look at this, the first appropriation for the village safe water, obviously coming from a village, the concerns that I have to do with the water and sewer that's there and the task force that's just been named. I was wondering if you might comment on the task force. Whether the recommendations are going to be, and the task force was actually patterned after the VPSO task force that seemed to be fairly successful a number of years ago. I was checking to see what your thoughts and ideas were on the task force that was just put forth, or the bill was just put forth recently.
Through the chair, Senator Olson, yes, there's a pending bill regarding a rural Alaska water and sewer task force. I think, first of all, the needs identified in that bill are something that we definitely recognize. There's a tremendous need to address water and sewer projects throughout the state. There's still remains 6,000 homes without water and sewer. In addition, we've got really hundreds of millions of dollars of need just in relation to existing facilities. So we recognize that need. There's a number of tasks outlined in the bill. A number of those tasks are currently being completed on an annual basis. We would be interested in working with legislators and their staff on trying to make sure that those tasks are being completed in a way that and the information is being distributed. Whether or not that task force is established, we certainly share the concern and the goals and want to work with the sponsors of the bill.
Sure. Last question, Mr. Chairman. Or has to do with your the $20.6 million that's there, 49749, with a number of projects that are the Unicleet water and sewer system improvements. We heard a number of phone calls from Unicleet related to that. I was wondering if you had any specifics on that for Unicleet.
Certainly, through the chair, Senator Olson. What remains to be done in Unicleet is to replace the raw water transmission main from the water source to the water plant. That water main is in jeopardy of being lost by erosion along the beach. We've determined from a number of years of study that it's not feasible to replace that in place anymore, that a new water source needs to be developed on a North Creek, North River. So for that reason, we're working with federal funding sources to identify funding and move forward with development of a new source and a new raw water line.
If I could just ask what's going on with the Gullivan water system, partly because only half of community is on water and sewer. Are you familiar with that improvement, water and sewer, water system improvements for Gullivan?
Senator Olson, through the chair, I might have to get back with you on the details on that.
Can do that.
Okay.
You can get back to the committee, and we'll pass the information along to the committee members. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you for coming forward today.
Thank you.
Next up, Department of Administration. Please introduce yourself for the record and who you represent and walk us through this capital.
For the record, I'm Becky Holtberg, the Commissioner of Administration, and with me I have Sherry Lowenstein, our Administrative Services Director. So beginning on page one, reference number 54681, we have the Nome State Office Building and Courthouse. That's a $10 million general fund request. The request will provide funds for planning and design of a new state office building and courthouse in Nome, and we'll evaluate the needs of the agencies in Nome for space.
Okay, next item, please.
Page two, reference number 54507, repair state office building parking garage, phase one of three. Our parking garages, the north and south garages by the state office building, are more than 37 years old, and are in significant need of repair. This is phase one of three. Page four, reference number 54683, Alaska Geologic Materials Center Replacement Facility, $4 million general fund. This project will pursue options to replace the current facilities for the Alaska Geologic Materials Center, which archives the state's legacy collection of geologic samples and related data and is important for the oil and gas industry.
On this particular appropriation, what kind of status will it leave our core samples in as far as is this a temporary fix or do we need to put in a bigger structure?
Mr. Chairman, this is the first phase of looking at what we need for a permanent solution. Right now these samples are housed in 40-foot containers that are over capacity. That's just simply an inadequate place to house materials of this significance. So this project will evaluate the potential whether it is to lease an existing facility or to construct a new facility to permanently house these core samples, which are important for Alaska because of the significance, their significance for oil and mineral development.
So I see that there's an appropriation request for 2013, but nothing coming. So I'd like to get a little bit more information from the department on this. The some of us toured the facility in Texas, which is they've got a couple of sites. One of them is a pretty expansive warehouse, and they had samples that went back to the early 1900s. But when the industry evolved over the last few decades and shale oil came into play, one of the things that show value to these type of holdings is the industry geologists came in there and went through the old core samples and found some of these big shale plays. So this is extremely valuable information that the industry attains and then releases to the state because they don't want to pay storage. But it's very valuable that we retain our core samples in our oil fields. So I was rather surprised at the condition in the state of Alaska where we keep ours in just conexes stacked on the ground. They need to be climate controlled and stored and accurately logged, because there are millions and millions of dollars to drill these wells, so you can't just go out and replace this stuff. So I'd like to have the department come back with us, back to the committee, on their end solution, so we can get an idea of how much it's going to cost and when can we get it implemented.
Mr. Chairman, we're happy to do that. We have a request for information that is out on the street right now, and once we receive all the responses back from that, we will have a better idea of the ultimate scope of the project.
Okay.
Page 6, reference number 54483, Douglas Island Building Renovation. This is phase 1 of 3. A recent assessment identified significant improvements that are required to rehabilitate the Douglas Island facility. The total cost is estimated to be between $17 and $21 million. The good news about this is that previous to this assessment, we did not believe the facility was in a condition where it could be rehabilitated. However, it can, and so we're asking to begin phase 1 of that project.
Okay. Next item.
Page 7, reference number 45931, the Alaska Land Mobile Radio Software Emergency Response Communication Security Upgrades, $3.5 million general fund. This will upgrade the Alaska Land Mobile Radio system. The system is overdue for a critical refresh of hardware and software, so this is upgrade to the actual system itself. Security patches are no longer available for the older version, and the underlying Windows server system software is no longer supported.
And Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Here's a question.
The contractors, how much do they get for their responsibilities to the state of Alaska?
Mr. Co-Chairman, I'm sorry, I'm not sure I'm understanding your question. Is
In the project description, you say that the contractors will be responsible for maintaining 41 sets of equipment for FY 2013. What is the total for that contract?
I don't have, Mr. Co-Chairman, I don't have that immediately in front of me, but I can get that information and get it back to you.
And is that a one-time contract? Because, again, in 2014, 15, 16, 17, there's no dollars.
Mr. Co-Chairman, we have a regular annual recurring expense to maintain this equipment that is done by some of which is done by contractors, which is in our operating budget. This request is to upgrade the software and hardware for the system. That there will be ongoing maintenance requirements for the system that are within our operating budget.
And it states here that there is high risk failure because of security patches. Regarding the old system, and there's the refreshment. What does the refreshing actually mean?
Mr. Co-Chairman, it is to install new software, upgrade the software and hardware essentially to account for where there have been vulnerabilities identified in security. It's just the same as with hardware or software on a personal computer. As technology changes, as threats become known, there's a need to refresh that software to upgrade it to account for those technological improvements.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I have some concerns. I know that the system is valuable, but every year it seems as though we're presented with a capital request of millions of dollars. And my question, I guess, is do you anticipate millions of dollars in FY14's budget as well in capital requests? I see that there is none.
Mr. Co-Chairman, I do not believe we anticipate anything in FY14's capital request. However, over the life of the system, there will likely be additional capital requests. Over the interim, we had a study done that identified those costs, and we can provide you with that information. We do know that these systems are, any radio system is going to have ongoing operational costs and maintenance costs. We do believe that the ALMR system, among the alternatives, is the most cost-effective system for the state to meet the Department of Public Safety and the Department of Transportation's needs, in addition to meeting the needs of the municipalities and other users that are on the system.
And the final question, Mr. Chairman, is what is the status of the shared costs with the municipalities?
Mr. Co-Chairman, we have a working group established that has representatives from the Federal Department of Defense, from non-Department of Defense federal participants, the Alaska Municipal League, and state users. That work group is tasked with coming up with a cost share proposal that we will review, and then we will present to the legislature next year. So we fully anticipate that by next year we will have a cost share proposal for the legislature that will assist us in sharing costs more equitably across the user groups.
Senator Hoffman.
And will we have an implementation deadline or plan for that as well?
Mr. Co-Chairman, we will, as I said, our anticipated timeline is to, the work has begun. We will continue that work and hopefully arrive at a cost share proposal by the fall, which we can then incorporate, because we will need to be able to incorporate that information into our budget for FY14.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Egan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the ALMR system is vital to Alaska, and going into the digital age, I mean, it'll save us money in the long run. But I'm concerned that there is not enough in the budget, and I have the same concern as Senator Hoffman that maybe we're putting the cart before the horse because we don't have agreements with municipalities yet, and the municipalities are going to be one of the major players in this, and that's one of my concerns. My other concern is I don't know if you have enough in Department of Administration's operating budget to maintain the system. I mean, it's going to cost a lot more money than our current system.
Through the chair, Senator Egan, we do have additional funds in our operating request this year that will provide for some of the things we've not been able to do, such as training. So certainly this has been, I want to acknowledge, a controversial and perhaps an issue that has not been handled well in the past by our department. However, I do believe that we've made significant progress in doing an assessment of the alternatives and in engaging the municipal users in a way I think that they have not been engaged before. So I appreciate your concerns. I agree with your concerns. I also want to assure the committee that we are continuing to evaluate what alternatives exist. There are some actions on the federal level that we're following very closely, so that if it does become apparent that there is a more cost-effective alternative for the state, we will be open to that.
Okay, George, just one final question, Commissioner, is are you budgeting for software upgrades? Because this is very sophisticated equipment. It's not like we have now. And technology keeps changing. A lot of the stuff in presentations that I've seen is this equipment is easily upgradable, but are we budgeting for this?
Through the chair, Senator Egan, this is specific request is for a software upgrade that accounts for the state's portion of the existing sites. We will be assuming additional sites from the federal government. They will be upgraded when we receive them, so we will not have to pay for the upgrades of those sites. In addition, we do have long-range projections that identify over the next 10 years what the anticipated costs will be for regular software upgrades.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Next item, please.
Page 9, reference number 54187, Enterprise Technology System Bandwidth Monitoring Toolset. This is $800,000 general fund request. This toolset's going to allow enterprise technology services to capture bandwidth usage by department. As you know, I believe from past requests, bandwidth is a significant issue for state agencies. The data will be gathered to show high usage areas, and we will then be able to adjust our billing based on actual bandwidth usage. Page 11, reference number 54176, Enterprise Technology System Bandwidth Improvement Project for Rural Sites. This is a $1.5 million general fund request. Bandwidth is a significant issue for all of our agencies, but most acute in our rural communities. This request will provide tools that will allow us to better utilize the bandwidth that we have. So this is not a request for new bandwidth, which is why it is a one-time request. It will simply allow us to put better tools in place to manage our existing bandwidth. Page 13, reference number 54040, Division of Motor Vehicles Driver Knowledge Testing System. The Division of Motor Vehicles is required to test all driver's license applicants. The current system that they are using is no longer, the company is no longer in business, so support and replacement parts are not available. Knowledge testing machines are currently available in only 13 of the 31 offices. In the other 18 offices, DMV clerks print out a paper test manually score it. So this will provide a driver knowledge testing system that is automated for all of the 31 offices. Page 16, reference number 51600, Retirement and Benefits Disaster Recovery System. This is year two of two. It is $325,000 retirement and benefit retirement funds. Retirement and Benefits houses health care and retirement information. They are legally mandated by the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act to develop a continuity plan of operations for IT systems that have access to that information. And these funds will bring DRB into compliance on two required elements, and two for the HIPAA security rule for electronic protected health information. Page 19, reference number 51599, Retirement and Benefits Combined Retirement System Upgrade, year 3 of 5. This is $350,000 retirement and benefit funds. This is the third year of a five-year project. The current combined retirement system is over 15 years old and is a significant and important system for our retirement system. It is written in COBOL and is rapidly nearing its end of its useful life, and this project is to replace that system. Page 22, reference number 51598, Retirement and Benefits Document Management System, year 3 of 4, $338,000 retirement and benefits funds. This is to replace an antiquated microfiche and microfilm document storage system to digitize those images, which provides better services for our retirees who are calling in because it allows their information to be pulled up immediately and provides operational advantage efficiencies for our department.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, will this be done in-house, or are you going to contract it out?
Through the chair, Senator Egan, I believe the majority of the work is being done in-house. However, I will come back to you with details because I do believe there's been some work done by contract.
Great, thank you.
Next item.
Page 25, reference number 49602, Deferred Maintenance, Renewal, Repair, and Equipment. This is a $10.25 million request, $7.25 million general fund, and $3 million public building funds. This is the department's allocation and the total requested for all deferred maintenance projects, which includes $6.25 million for deferred maintenance in the public building fund group, $500,000 general fund for facilities IP phone upgrade and deferred maintenance, which is year two of two, $500,000 general fund for the non-public building fund group, and $3 million general fund for the State of Alaska Telecommunications Deferred Maintenance, year 3 of 5.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Past appropriations were substantially less than this, and future appropriations were substantially less than this year's request. I wonder if you could provide me with a list of the projects that are proposed to be addressed under this deferred appropriation request of $10.25 million. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So if you can get back to the committee with a little bit of the history and then the current current request and the projection in the future. And also, I'm just kind of curious, thinking back a couple years ago, there was a lot of requests from the department for a very expensive software upgrades and rewrites. I want to say it was 70 or 100 million or some number. Whatever happened to that process?
Mr. Chairman, I believe you're referring to our IRIS project. That's Integrated Resource Information System project, which will replace the Access system and the ACPay system, our payroll and accounting systems. That project has been funded fully through capital appropriations in the past. We are currently in the process of implementing that system. It is a four-year project, so we are in really a year one of that project, and we're happy to provide you with an update on it.
Okay. Thank you. Next item.
That concludes our list, Mr. Chairman.
Right. Does anybody have any questions on the allocations? Okay. So with that, I guess we're done with admin, and thank you very much for coming in this morning. Next up, we have Military and Veterans Affairs. And if you can introduce yourself for the record, who you represent, and take us through the appropriation request, please.
Good morning. My name is Susan Culligan. I'm the Administrative Services Director for the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, and I have with me the Deputy Commissioner, McHugh Pierre.
Could I get you to pull the mic up, please?
Certainly. Is that better, sir? We have seven appropriations this morning. The last has 12 allocations with it. The first appropriation request is on page one for the Interior Alaska Veterans Cemetery, reference number 47882. The request is for an additional $2 million in federal authority. The VA has determined that their initial estimates for cemetery costs have increased, and they are providing the additional funding. The second appropriation request is on page two. It's for the construction of a storage facility for the state's Mobile Emergency Operations Center vehicle, reference number 54798. The request is for $925,000 in general funds. The project is to construct a facility that provides indoor heated storage for the state's Mobile Emergency Operations Center vehicle.
We have a question from Senator Egan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Where's this vehicle housed now?
Through the chair, Senator Egan. Right now, it's housed at Old Coolis Airfield in one of those buildings there in temporary storage. We would like to put it across the bridges in the Matsu area so that it can be mobilized on the road system in case of an emergency and a disaster.
So this building, that's all this building is going to do is house this vehicle?
Through the chair.
It's like a pretty expensive building.
Excuse me. Through the chair, Senator Egan. This building will also be, it's part of our COOP, continuity of operations plan, and so it will also be utilized for a separate emergency operations center. So the vehicle actually can be put outside of the building and hooked up to electricity. We have telecommunications, video, satellite communications in the piece of equipment, and then the building can also be used for our emergency operations center.
And if you could give us a little bit of a summary of what this vehicle is and how mobile it actually is.
For the record, Mr. Chairman, this is McHugh Pierre, Deputy Commissioner. The vehicle's about 46 to 50 feet long. It's essentially a giant Class C motorhome. It's larger than, it's probably twice or three times the size of a normal motorhome. It doesn't fit on our ferries. We can barge it to any community in Southeast. We've been looking into our different operational options there. It comes with a truck and a trailer, so it's used for 24-hour operations. We bring it up to Summit Lake for the activities up there every winter, and we bring it down to Seward for 4th of July festivities. It's critical for us to have this as a backup tool in case of a catastrophic event, and that's why we need it outside of the bridges of Anchorage where our current State Emergency Operations Center is located.
So how do you get it to Nome in the winter?
Well, we would have to, Mr. Chairman, we'd have to put it on a barge and get it up there at ice-breaking capacity with the Coast Guard, much as you saw today.
Can it fly in a C-130, or can you move this? And then if you can't put it in a plane, how big a plane does it take, and what airports can they get into?
Mr. Chairman, we can put this into C-17. Obviously, that's limited as to where it can go in Alaska. This is for big events. On the road system primarily. We have smaller devices, communications packages that we can put in a Black Hawk, from suitcase to trailer size that you can put on a truck or a four-wheeler.
Can you get it in the Juno?
Yes, sir.
If we had a tidal wave or something, you can fly. Juno's airport's big enough to handle it?
Yes, sir. We've landed C-17s here, and active duty has landed C-5s here.
Okay.
So both of those can carry this.
So then I would assume then that they could land in Cold Bay and Sitka, Ketchikan, probably Cordova, Yakutat, any place Alaska Airlines lands their jets. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. And then is there planes that can carry this available?
Mr. Chairman, we have seven, and we'll be getting an 8 C-17.
Okay. So it is truly an Alaska-based response vehicle.
Yes, sir.
It's not just where you have the road system.
Yes, sir. That is correct.
Okay.
The third appropriation is on page 4. It's for the installation of a fire sprinkler system at Camp Denali on Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson, JBEAR, reference number 51393. The request is for $1.8 million in federal authority and $1.2 million in general fund match. And the project will address necessary code upgrades required by the Department of Defense. The fourth appropriation on page 5 is for statewide emergency food supplies, reference number 54824. The request is for $4,860,000 in general funds. Funding will be used to establish a strategic catastrophic food reserve consisting of meals ready to eat to sustain 30,000 victims for 7 days.
And could you give us a little background to where this came from? Is there an apocalypse coming, or is this an updated food supply, or what's going on here?
Mr. Chairman, that's confidential information as far as the apocalypse is concerned. In all seriousness, Mr. Chairman, we're trying to be as best prepared as we can. You've supported our request for emergency power generation capabilities. We know that if we have a significant event here, we're going to be isolated, and we need to have some type of emergency food supply. Now, we don't have the final plans in place for how we're going to get this together. Right now, our plan is to have some 800,000 meals. 40,000 people for 7 days, 3 meals a day, stored in strategic areas across the state. But we're working with, the idea of some type of outside vendor where if there's a hurricane or there's tornadoes and, say, a company needs to move food supplies to that region of the country, then they would naturally replenish our food supply as well. So we can have a built-in refresh mechanism. So we're not coming to you in 3 more years saying, we've got food that expired and we need $2 million more to buy more food. Or so that we're not also just giving away the food, although that's not a bad idea. We could give it away to those in need here in the state. But we'd like to have a natural refresh mechanism to make sure we have a fresh supply and that we're ready in case of the worst emergency.
And what condition is the state in today? Is there any type of backup food supply or where we're currently?
Mr. Chairman, all we have is the community food banks. And you know that talking with the local grocery chains and the local grocery stores across the state, that we have a very short backup supply. We have a short inventory in our state. And that's our biggest concern is the logistical issue of getting that resource. Now, I must say that Fish and Game has been a tremendous partner in this effort. They've identified possible emergency hunting openings, emergency fishing openings to allow people to get food, but there are certain areas that, or certain times of year, that might not be available or as easily obtained. So we're trying to look at all those options and put them into play.
And then the storage facilities or locations, where are they going to be?
Well, one of these locations is going to be the MEOC facility as well that we'd like to build in Alcantara up in Wasilla. But we'd also like to move these around to existing facilities, say, you know, our new Bethel Armory. We certainly have facilities in Southeast. We're going to try to co-locate this in a, it has to be in a humidity climate controlled facility. And we'd like to co-locate these with our generators that we have as well around the state. That way, naturally, we can't have the certain operations of the generators and the food in the same area, but we can store them in similar locations or close to each other. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I've never seen anybody starve to death in Southeast yet.
Thankfully.
I understand the issue of dealing with a major metropolitan area if you're New Orleans. Our fishing fleet could feed this state forever with the amount of volume that we have off our shores. So in the game and that low tide, I have a hard time grasping the starvation in Alaska. Senator Egan.
You said it, Mr. Chair.
We can go to the next item, please.
The next appropriation is on page 6. It's for National Guard counter-drug support, reference number 42898. The request is for $100,000 in federal receipt authority. It's to allow the state of Alaska to receive federal funds as a result of forfeiture situations in drug enforcement operations. The next appropriation is on page 7. It's for the State Homeland Security Grant Programs, reference number 42901. The request is for $9.5 million in federal receipt authority. This is an annual appropriation to allow receipt of federal Homeland Security grant awards. Mr. Chairman, our last appropriation is on page 8. It's for the Military and Veterans Affairs Deferred Maintenance, Renewal, Repair, and Equipment, reference number 49583. It's requesting $4,542,500 in federal receipt authority, $1,745,000 in general fund match, and $2,255,000 in general funds.
Okay. Do we have any questions on this appropriation, separate allocations? I see none. I think that concludes your presentation today.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you.
Next up, Department of Natural Resources.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ed Fogel. So I'm the Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources, and with me is Jean Davis, our Support Services Director, and she will go through our capital budget for you.
Thank you. Good morning. For the record, my name is Jean Davis. I'm the Director of the Support Services Division for the Department of Natural Resources. Our capital project requests in FY13 are for $31.3 million, of which $18.5 is unrestricted general fund. We developed these projects to really focus on DNR's key strategies related to responsible resource development and focused on oil development, strategic and critical minerals assessments, permitting reform, and projects that support job creation around the state. Our first project is the Unified Permit Project and Document Management, reference number 38872, for $3,300,000 of general fund. This is supports our permitting reform strategies and is a project that will modernize our DNR permitting and case management system to create an interactive application system. Overall goals for the project are to shorten and make consistent cycle times for land and water use authorizations, to make sure that we can help guide applicants to the correct authorization requests and forms, and build internal systems that will support DNR in managing the land and water use permits. Second project is strategic and critical minerals assessment, reference number 51052. It is for $2,730,000 of general fund. This is a five-year project that will help determine the potential of state lands for hosting strategic and critical mineral deposits. Our Division of Geologic and Geophysical Surveys will conduct geologic fieldwork throughout Alaska, obtaining geophysical surveys, geologic mapping, and geochemical analysis, and evaluate new and available data to determine the strategic and critical mineral ore deposits and publish the details on our website, communicating to the public, and hoping to stimulate development in these areas. Next project, geologic assessment of the North Slope shale oil potential. Reference number 53984 is for $100,000 of general fund. It is for our Division of Geologic and Geophysical Surveys, again, to stimulate new investment and exploration activity by producing new data on North Slope shale oil resource potential.
Can you give us a little update on how that ties into the USGS and their process?
Mr. Chairman, yes. We are working cooperatively with the U.S. Geological Survey, and when they released their latest report, we had provided them with a lot of information that we had already collected, and we're also taking into account the information that they've collected in our assessments too. We're going out and we're doing additional field work and studies with our geologists at the Division of Geologic and Geophysical Surveys.
Have they released that study yet to the public? I know there's been some notes in the paper that it's coming.
Yes, we have not released a study yet. The USGS just released their study, but our geological survey has not yet.
Okay. And then why is it just $100,000? It doesn't seem to me that you'd be able to scrape that out of your own budget.
Mr. Chairman, that's what our geological staff determined they needed for this round. We are, it's part of our long-range plan, and we anticipate coming back next year, hopefully, for some additional funding to continue this.
Yeah, I see next year's request potentially is 300. So maybe we can go to the next item, and I'll have some more questions. The next item is related.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The next item is the Shale Oil Environmental Data Project, reference number 53995. This particular funding will allow the state to develop an inventory or database of environmental data that would support developers and permitters for shale oil development, and we would make that data available to them. The goal is to collect data into one database that would include identification and delineation of wetlands, streams, and other jurisdictional water bodies, surveys of habitat and animal and fish populations, and surveys of subsistence activities and other potential resource conflicts, with the goal of putting it out in one inventory area to support the documentation that developers need to engage in environmental impact statements.
So is this triggered by Great Bear's current leases, and is that what's moving the state forward now in this area?
Mr. Chairman, in part it is. It's a much bigger issue here. We're looking at potentially a lot of permitting activity on the North Slope in the future. We're very hopeful on that, and especially if a larger project matures into something where it might need to go through the federal NEPA process, they're going to need a lot of baseline information. And while this effort won't give an applicant all the baseline data he will need for an environmental impact statement, it will provide a big piece of that, and will make kind of level the playing field and make it easier on potential applicants to get through the NEPA process by starting the baseline data collection process.
Okay. Just as a side comment, what kind of sticks out to me is it's roughly, I think, the shale. There's roughly three layers and 1,000 foot deep, ballpark, three, four times what North Dakota has in depth. And in sheer magnitude, just dwarfs it. And my concern is that the state gets behind the curve on this particular issue. A few years ago, with the quick proliferation of shale gas, it was quicker than anybody, most people anticipated. And if oil is anywhere close to that, you know, we're going to be scrambling to catch up. And in potential, and potentially, I know our lease rates are next to nothing relative to some of the competitors in the shale area. So there is a concern that, that we don't have the data that we should have. So is this enough effort dealing with shale oil to protect the state's interest?
Mr. Chairman, yes, we believe it is. Again, typically when an applicant advances a project, they are typically responsible for the bulk of the permitting costs. $1 million is a drop in the bucket for a large project for baseline data collection. So this will not supplant the permittee's responsibility to pay for environmental data. It will just help lay a baseline that we hope will draw more interest in exploring and developing projects on the North Slope. And also I'd like to point out that we have been trying really hard to get ahead of the curve on shale oil exploration and development on the North Slope. We have been working an interagency shale oil task force of agency people so that we can brainstorm ideas. This is actually something that came out of that task force, so that we were ready to do permitting efficiently on the North Slope. So we are trying to do our best to get ahead of the curve.
And just as a side, I don't know where to ask this question, so I'll just throw it down the table. Previous Department of Administration was in here with a request for a building to store and protect our core samples, which I think are extremely valuable, and they should be held for generations. Why isn't that under DNR's governance? And why, you know, I'm concerned of the condition of our core samples relative to what I saw in Texas, and the value that the state of Texas is getting out of them is immeasurable. So can you help me and help the committee with what's going on with our core samples?
Mr. Chairman, yes, I can. The current Geologic Materials Center is a DNR facility. It's operated by our staff at the Division of Geologic and Geophysical Surveys. And yes, Commissioner Holtberg, and you are correct, the current facility is in great disrepair. We need to find a new location for that valuable geologic data. We have Prudhoe Bay well number one stored out at that facility. We have been primarily the driver since we operate the current facility, but it was decided that the Department of Administration, since they're the facility, they have more expertise in facilities than we do, that they're going to sort of take the lead in asking for this money and to do the study to find out whether we are best off building a brand new facility or leasing an existing facility. We don't have that kind of expertise within DNR.
Well, let me answer that question real quick. You know, these samples in Texas are almost 100 years old. I don't want to see the state renting a storage unit for 100 years. It's crazy. We need to build our own facility and inventory and categorize and store these things, because they're, I don't know how many countless millions. It's probably hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars worth of core samples sitting in Texas. And I would imagine we've got hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars worth of core samples sitting in Connex Vanses. And as technology changes, the interest of the industry, geologists come in there and they find vast wealth where previous generations thought it was, you know, unattainable. So I am concerned that we're overlooking this. And for instance, the shale oil environment that the state has, you know, any core sample that was ever drilled through that is extremely valuable. So I think I passed a note to my aide. I'm going to have the department come in and give us a presentation just on this issue alone, because I think it's something that we'd be remiss to not take it seriously. Senator Thomas, and then Senator.
I share that same concern and wondered how the coordination will be done, because it would seem to me that the Geologic Material Center should be where at least the starting point for things, and it also sloughs over into the roads to resources situation, because many of the sites even mentioned for the strategic and critical minerals assessment have been sites where actually there's been exploration and exportation of materials from those areas already. So I guess want to see that there's that coordination again, and I know you guys are probably getting tired of hearing me say this, that coordination between DOT building roads to resources, natural resources, providing information, and having a facility that can be the starting point for almost any of the development that is anticipated and an evaluation of that, rather than kind of downplaying one and starting off on a new inventing the wheel kind of situation. So I share the same concerns about that facility being upgraded ASAP so we don't spin our wheels in some areas.
We have a question from Senator Hoffman and then Senator McGuire, and then we're going to take a brief at ease.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Going to page 12, the need for the project. It states that Alaska is at a crossroads in its history of oil and gas exploration and development. I think everyone is well aware of that, and I would agree with the chairman. You look at what is being proposed for expenditure, $22,000 on personal services, partial funding for existing permanent staff, $3,000 for travel, and $75,000 for contracts. If we are at a crossroads, it seems as though we would be proposing 10 times as much money in this particular area, knowing what happened in North Dakota. I think there's potential of, you know, of millions of gallons of additional oil, if not billions of gallons, and it seems as though we're not giving it due attention, and I just wanted to say that on the record, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator McGuire, and then we'll go to an at ease.
Thank you. Thank you. And just briefly through the chair, speaking of coordination between departments, I wanted to know if you are aware, Commissioner Bell presented to us a new economic development initiative designed to market Alaska's resources and development. And to that end, if you're aware of it, I just wanted to be sure, it's more of a comment than a question, that the information that's garnered from the shale environmental data is shared with DCD and perhaps put into some kind of a brochure, white paper, if you will, that can be taken with them on this roadshow to entice investment.
Yes, Senator McGuire, through the chair, we're definitely in very close communication with the Department of Commerce and Commissioner Bell and her staff, and we have a good relationship. They have some really good minerals people on staff now that are really high energy, and they have incredibly good marketing ideas for our resources, and they're working very closely with DNR staff right now.
Excellent.
We'll stand at ease here for a brief at ease. Back on the budget, or back on the record, and then we'll work on the budget. I guess we're on page 16, is that correct? Patok long-term timber sale and biomass energy, what is that?
The Southeast plan.
Thank you. The Tok long-term timber sale for biomass energy, reference number 53979, $200,000 of general fund. This is for our Division of Forestry to plan, design, do field layout, the public process, and startup administration for a long-term contract to supply timber, woody biomass to the Alaska Power and Telephone. In TOC, they have requested a 20 to 25-year supply contract so that they may secure financing for their project that would be powering a power facility for the communities of TOC and potentially looking to the surrounding communities of Northway, Tetlin, Mentasta, Tanacross, and Dot Lake.
So is this firewood, or are they want to get into making pellets, or what are they doing?
Mr. Chairman, this would be a project that would allow the use of the trees, the biomass, for energy production, resin pellets, or there are like the TOC biomass boiler that they just put in the TOC school there. Just has a big chipper, and it grinds up the trees into chips that are burned in a pretty high-tech boiler and heats that whole school. So this would be a some kind of biomass power generation unit for the power company, and they need a long-term guaranteed supply of biomass wood for that reactor to pencil it out.
And what kind of volume are they talking about? Do you know?
Mr. Chair, it's 25 to 30,000 tons annually.
Yeah, but that doesn't help me. How many board feet are they going to cut? I understand that. I don't know how much a tree weighs.
Now, Mr. Chair, I'm not sure I can really convert that from that tonnage to board feet, but we can get back to you.
If you can get back to us and then escape clauses out of that contract in the event that, you know, we eventually get natural gas or some other supply, energy supply to them. I understand the desire to run buildings on wood boilers, but I think that started to end with Nelson Rockefeller and Exxon 100 years ago. I just hate to see the state going backwards. So if you could go on to the next item, please.
Next item is assessment of the in-state gas energy potential, reference number 49185. This is the final phase of a three-year project that we've received funding for, $200,000, and is providing critical data for evaluating natural gas potential in prospective unexplored basins near transportation corridors and population centers. This project is focused specifically in Susitna and Nenana basins. We are in the process of making the determination on the final amount of field work that needs to be done before we can compile the final reports for publication, and this would finish that.
And why isn't the Yukon Basin a target? It seems like a bigger basin with potentially hydrocarbons.
Mr. Chair, one of the first things our geologists did when they started this project is they evaluated all the basins in Alaska, and they picked the two most likely targets that they would that we felt, our geologists felt, would be the best for us to expend our energies on in the near term, and that's why they picked the Nenana and the Susitna basins. I think that in future years that the other basins are definitely worth looking at also, but these are the top two that our geologists determined were the priority.
Okay. Next item.
The next item is an upgrade to our well log tracking system. We also refer to that as the WELT system, reference number 53966. It's $112,000 of general fund, and this will allow us to upgrade this well tracking system, which is a publication and distribution of groundwater information. We will make it, put it on a web environment. We have far too many people trying to access a database on a Microsoft server, and it is unwielding, and we're not able to maintain it.
Okay. Next item.
Next item is a Lower Kosilof River drift boat takeout. This is phase 2 of 2, reference number 51197. It is for $1,600,000 of general fund. It's the second phase. It will provide us for a public drift boat takeout on the Lower Kosilof River area.
So what give me an idea on the boat haul out. What are you going to build?
Mr. Chair, the boat haul out will be a ramp with some kind of winch system where the drift boats, as they come down the Gusilov, they'll get to the ramp, and then someone can run up and grab the winch system and hook it to their boat and yard it on up and get it on a trailer and get it out of there. There really is no facility right now in the lower Kasilov, and it's actually kind of a risky situation there. People are using pickup trucks and trying to drag their boats up, and so there have been accidents there. So and there's been a lot of increasing use on the Kasilov as the Kenai gets more and more crowded. More and more people are going to the Kasilov to fish, so it's really picking up, and we think that this would serve the public very well.
You know, there's all kinds of different terrain around the state, so help me a little bit with why there has to be a winch, and they can't back, they don't, I thought they had their boats on trailers, and they just backed them down and launched them.
Right. Mr. Chair, near the mouth of the Kasilov, the terrain is very muddy. It's very kind of long mud flats, which make it very hard to back equipment down there. I don't think you can back a pickup truck down there, even some kind of tractor or something, and even that I think would be problematic.
Mm-hmm. So how do they get their skiff on a trailer? I'm still kind of confused how you get a boat in and out off across the mud flats, get it on your trailer, and drive it down the road.
Right. Well, Mr. Chair, I haven't actually seen a winch like this operate myself. I imagine that the winch will pull it up at some point. And drift boats they're not like big motorboats. They can be hoisted up, and I think that they'll figure out a way to get it on the trailer. But I could get more information for you on that.
That's fine. I'm sure Senator Hoffman will give me an education on how the boys up north assault their river, so you don't have to.
He'll much bigger river.
Much bigger river. Senator McGuire.
Thank you, through the chair. Isn't this something, though, that typically ends up getting picked up by the private sector? And I guess that would be my only concern about it. I've been, on many river systems where you pay somebody to do exactly this by tractor. And it's a great economic engine for small businesses in some of these communities. So I guess my concern would be that if the state comes in and takes this role, then nobody's going to want to pay the private sector to do it, and you lose out on that opportunity.
Well, Senator McGuire, through the chair, and that's a good point. Right now, there is no private sector opportunity to take out our parks. Our Division of Parks has a put-in on the Kasilov River, and so we have an opportunity for drift boats to get on the river. But right now, there really isn't. I believe at one time there was a facility, but now there is no facility there. So we would build a facility and operate it, and at some point, if it made sense or there was expression of interest in the private sector, we could entertain contracting it out. But again, at this point, there is no facility there, so we're stepping up to the plate to offer to provide one.
Could you clear up, your department will operate it? You're going to have an employee there to run this thing?
Mr. Chair, I'm actually not sure. I'll have to get back to you.
You can get back to me on that. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, the first paragraph says that this is phase two. Phase one, I assume we funded $2 million, and this is phase two for the construction. Maybe we can get a copy of what was purchased with the $2 million last year.
Okay. Get back to the committee on this particular issue.
Yes, sir.
Last point.
Yeah, I have another question, by Senator McGuire.
Thank you. And through the chair, when you come back to us, if you could just give an opinion, too, from Department of Law about the state's liability. And I guess that I'm referencing now under project description justification, talks about private launches being somewhat unreliable and unsafe with a death occurring during a boat retrieval on private land during the summer of 2010. And I guess my concern would simply be if we take on this mammoth task and then provide the staffing for it, are we on the hook if something happens?
We'll get you some information on that, Senator.
Thank you.
Okay, next item, please.
Next item is the Coastal Marine Boundary Mapping Project, reference number 53975. It is $180,000 of general fund and will provide for a coastal boundary consultant to review decisions of the U.S. Baseline Committee affecting Alaska's offshore limit. In 2006, the committee conducted reevaluation of Alaska's coastline, and contrary to standard procedure, DNR was not consulted. We believe the committee made some incorrect decisions which adversely affect the state's interest. We will undertake a comprehensive review of the committee's decisions in these areas and request reconsideration where we can demonstrate that they were incorrect decisions.
So what does that mean in English?
Mr. Chair, the bottom line is that the federal government has redrawn the three-mile limit for Alaska, which determines what land we own, and we believe there is an error in a number of places, and that could cost Alaska tens or hundreds of thousands of acres of submerged land, which could have resource potential on it. There are fisheries management implications, and so we want to review those decisions, find those errors, and make an argument to correct them so we get that acreage back.
So is that the entire coastline of Alaska from Dixon Entrance up to the Canadian border?
Yes, we have 35,000 miles of coastline, and we'll be looking at all those decisions now. There are only issues in some places, and we can probably, figure out where the problem areas are right away. But, it's the whole coastline.
Okay, we're probably not going to get through your whole list today because the bells are starting to ring, but we're going to go keep going here a little while longer. Senator Hoffman.
On this appropriation, what involvement would the Coastal Zone Management Program have had on this these lands that are under jeopardy?
Senator Hoffman, through the chair, this particular appropriation is to deal with a fairly technical surveying issue. So one area where the Coastal Zone Program might have been involved is that the experts that are looking at the specific coastlines might have used some of the resource reports that the districts have created, and they may still be of great value. So I think that the consultants and the surveyors that are examining the specifics of Alaska's coastline will need all the information they can get to make sure they understand where that three-mile limit should be drawn.
But I guess my position is that with all of the coastal zone managements that were in existence, they could have been, if they were still in existence, they could have been a great support to protect these vast coastline areas the same way the state of Alaska is, and we don't have them for backup at this time anymore. So we are potentially fighting this battle on our own when we could have had a lot of local individuals out there that have the same interests, the same concerns, working on this very same issue. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Other questions on this item? The next item.
Timber and Resource Roads, reference number 54849. This is a $2 million general fund request to provide funding for identification, planning, and development of roadways to access timber, minerals, and other potential resources.
And why is this appropriation at $2 million and not larger?
Senator Stedman, $2 million. When we are developing the budgets, we evaluate all the priorities and work with the governor's budget and governor's priorities.
Yeah. Next item, please.
Actually, the next eight items that we have here are actually recurring projects that we've had in front of the committee for several years. They are multi-year grant type projects, so that they should go fairly quick. The first one is an abandoned mine lands reclamation federal program, reference number 6855, for $3,200,000 of federal receipt authority. And this is promoting reclamation of areas mined before prior to the enactment of the federal Surface Mining Control and Reclamation Act of 1977.
And that's cleanup? And do you have is that correct?
I didn't.
Cleanup?
Yes, it is. Reclamation, thank you. Particularly in, coal and non-coal sites.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, yes, it's primarily, the money is primarily just spent on cleaning up historic coal sites, but some of the money can be used for non-coal, but it's typically designed to do old sites that were created before modern mining laws were in place.
Okay. Next item.
National Historic Preservation Fund, reference number 6865, $750,000, of which $600,000 is federal, $150,000 of general fund match. Historic Preservation Fund is a federal program that assists states with maintaining a statewide historic preservation program. We fund grants to local governments, agencies, organizations, and individuals for restoration and stabilization of historic properties and funding for surveys, inventory, education, planning, and training.
Okay.
Snowmobile Trail Development Program grants, reference number 33690, for $250,000 of vehicle receipts. Funds for this project are receipted through the snowmobile registration fees paid by Alaskans, and they are projects that are distributed in the form of matching grants for trail and trailhead development, maintenance, grooming, safety education, trail identification, and access to trails.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wonder if the department can give us a list of recipients for the last 5 years under this program.
Yes.
And if you could give us a forward projection, too. It's always nice to look backwards, but then look forward into where you see the direction headed. Let's do one more, and then we'll stop, and we'll pick it up Monday, if that's all right, the committee.
The next project is the federal and local government-funded forest resources and fire program projects, reference number 37769. This project simply provides federal receipt authority for our one-time federally funded projects that support forestry or fire programs, particularly hazardous fuel reduction, FireWise education, prevention and education, community wildfire protection planning, and forest health.
Okay, seeing no questions there, that'll conclude this morning's meeting. The next meeting will be Monday morning, 9 a.m., agency overviews and continuing into the afternoon. We might have some bills previously heard on the docket. Senator Hoffman will be chairing the meeting, and the following Monday morning, Senator Hoffman will be chairing. We are adjourned.